Welcome to the Concept 101 podcast. My name is Daniel.
Jules.
Stefan.
We're three concept artists currently working in the film and games industry, as well as the organizers of the Concept 101 event in London. Today, as per usual, we're going to be throwing a few different topics around, and we're going to be starting off with one that is very kind of, I guess, relevant for the state of the industry right now. So as I'm sure many of you have seen, because it's kind of been unavoidable, there have been just like vast and kind of expansive really layoffs across every sector of the entertainment industry, which has been an incredible shame to see. It really does feel sometimes like every second day somebody I know is losing their job, which is of course incredibly unpleasant, especially for them. Luckily, all three of us have managed to kind of keep our jobs going at the time of recording.
Touch wood.
Yeah. But we thought that we would talk about kind of some advice that we've heard from other people, as well as things that we have personally found helpful to kind of keep our own careers stable and kind of do a bit of future proofing.
Yeah.
So we're going to start off with talking about kind of how to prepare for these almost inevitable downturns that do happen in really any industry, but seem to happen fairly often in the entertainment industry.
Of course, the point is not to say like some people might lose their job because they haven't prepared or anything. That's not at all. It's more like what can you do in your career in general?
Event. Yeah.
So when something like this happens, you are better prepared than others, or you just have a more stable career, or you have more weapons I get to rely on.
Yeah.
Weapons, tools in the tool shed. Tools,
yeah. No, weapons.
Hey, whatever you want.
We're not in Switzerland. This is not like you can have a gun in your house. I'm just saying.
But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing, right? Because yeah, like we said, a lot of incredibly talented people have unfortunately lost their jobs recently. And I think there's probably very little that anybody who is part of a layoff. I mean, I've been through a few layoffs myself personally. I've managed to survive through them. But I don't think anybody during those periods who actually did get laid off did anything particularly to say, you know, to deserve these things happening for them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you see so many, sorry.
No, go on.
I see so many like people, I'm not going to be naming people, but like it's kind of like some people post about it and stuff like that on social media. And you see people who are like some of the best artists in the world, you know, and they lose their job and like, it's probably just a random thing that happened and the whole department maybe got redundant. It's nothing to do with them as an artist. And, you know, because they are well prepared and very famous, they'll have something scheduled the next day probably.
Yeah, it is a bit of an act of God, I think, generally most of the time.
Totally.
And yeah, it's not a reflection on anybody's skill, I think, at all ever. But in the event that random act of God does happen, kind of what do you guys think are like good things that you can do beforehand, potentially just generally throughout your career to ensure that if that does happen to you, you have kind of something to fall back on?
I guess the first thing that comes to mind is that when you lose your job, you're jobless, right? But then what do you do to find your job? Well, you need to apply again. And what do you need to apply? Up-to-date portfolio, right? And so I guess it might happen that some people don't do any personal work for a lot of years. And so once they find themselves out of job, all of a sudden, all the work they have, which is probably much better than the work they have in the portfolio, is all NDA, or it's all been on projects which are not ready to be shown yet.
Yeah.
And so what do you do then? Well, I guess that's exactly a way you can prepare yourself, is making sure you do some personal work, that you keep learning, and that you keep producing stuff. So in the event that anything happens, you're ready with up-to-date tools and not weapons to go back and apply.
Yeah, I think this is unfortunately something a lot of people do miss out on, especially younger students. I mean, I really understand kind of the feeling of once you've got your job to chill out a little bit, but considering, I mean, this career is not always unstable, but there is always a risk of instability, you know, whether a game does badly, whether a film doesn't perform as well as a studio wants, can really create a lot of ripple effects across a lot of other gigs. And so it's very important to always be kind of, I mean, I would say, I mean, I'd want to say more than once a year, but, you know, probably you should be producing at least one project a year to really show where your skills are at and producing a piece of work that again shows a diversity of skills throughout it. So a lot of artists, I think, you know, some of us as well here at the table, we do produce a fair amount of personal work, which isn't necessarily always, I would call, like, skill building personal work. It's more for fun. Mm-hmm. But if you produce enough of that for fun work on a consistent basis, it shows a large variety of skills.
Yeah.
However, if you're going to say, like, I'm only going to do one project per year, that's going to be like my little contribution to, you know, my future fund almost to myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to make sure that that is a very dense project that shows off all of the technical skills that you might need to show when you're applying for a new job.
Or it has to be something that's linked to what's like where you'd like your career to direct towards, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you know, maybe you've been working on, I don't know, a game for like a few years, which is a medieval game, but you're really dreaming of working on a sci-fi game.
Yeah.
Well, maybe don't do it medieval personal work, just because that would at least help you in the future into redirecting, into a direction that you might want, like more.
The other thing is having a larger portfolio can also be a very good mm-hmm. kind of get for a lot of companies. I can say for sure with conversations I've had with like clients in the past that the size and up-to-dateness, so to speak, mm-hmm. of my portfolio has been quite a good draw for a lot of clientele because let's say that they're working on a project which is, like you said earlier, like a spaceship project.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have spaceships in my portfolio, but let's say the same client happens upon my portfolio and they're looking for something to do with like muscle-bound men with swords hitting each other. I've also got that in my portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So having that kind of like larger diversified portfolio, which again does take much longer to build, and I think it is a little bit more of a kind of labor of love that you have to put mm-hmm. the time into, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Can be very, very helpful because it means that you can jump onto way more projects which are potentially available rather than kind of being limited to like only fantasy work or only sci-fi work or only creature design or blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely allows you to adapt to the situation better.
I want to put in, like, I guess I am maybe out of the three of us in this table, I have posted the least amount of personal work in the past like 2 years or something. But it doesn't mean that I don't have any personal work or that I don't have, like, I've worked on some like hard surface project that I never released that's like half finished. I'm working currently on a mentorship right now as well. So I have like, I don't have things posted, but I definitely have enough things that if I needed to, mm-hmm. I could build a portfolio fairly fast. Maybe not, it's not ideal, but I think, at least the way I look at it, if you have enough money to survive for at least like month or two, whilst you can build your portfolio up, you know, and you have like some plan if it happens, I think that's also better than to not have anything or not work on anything at all after work. If that's at least that's the way I look at it, you know.
Yeah.
Have at least something, be like, okay, if something happens, okay, I have these three things, I'm just going to like finish those.
Yeah.
And then I can at least have something in my portfolio to go from there.
I would say though, sorry, but that's probably not the best recommended route, right?
No,
to
it's
be
not,
totally
it's not.
Real. Like, I think you have to be very aware of the fact that at the end of the day, as concept artists, or really in any industry in the modern day, we all work for people.
Mm-hmm.
And those people work for much larger corporations generally, which can, if they want to, especially with a lot of the contract structures that you receive as a concept artist, they can just fire you on a whim, which is very sad when it happens, but it is also a reality that it can happen. And I think regardless of how comfortable you feel with your company, you should probably always be slightly aware of that, right? And just kind of be reticent of the fact that, you know what, even if you love everybody you work with and they're amazing people, you might be fired for reasons totally out of their control.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It might have absolutely nothing to do with them. It could be to do with the larger economy on some other completely different level. And that's the end of your gig at that particular place. So you always have to kind of have a certain level of discomfort, I think, and awareness of like that potentially happening that will drive you forward throughout your career.
And not to sound too doom-like or too like dark and like,
he's going to say something really dark and sad.
No, I'm going to say something good. But basically, that's like we've been presenting it in a way. Like, do personal work because it will help you in that times. But I think there's another, the biggest motivation that should drive you is that, you know, I assume that a lot of people doing this as a living are into art quite heavily, right? Because you don't get good enough to work in this industry if it's not a big drive of passion, right? And doing some of it, or like maybe challenging yourself, like something that you, if you're very comfortable into a specific setting, which is similar to what you do at work, but then maybe try and find the excitement of other areas of concept art. If you're very good at ship design, maybe try doing medieval stuff in your personal time, and just seeing it as a personal growth rather than as a, ooh, I don't want to suffer too much when problems come. That might be a more motivational, like
depends what motivates you,
more positive,
right?
Yeah, but like it might be a bit more a more positive way to see it. It's like, I'm gonna just learn something new. I'm gonna get better. And also, you know, you doing personal work, you learning new things, even if you don't get fired, even if there's no problem at work, that's gonna help you to negotiate better rates down the line. It's like,
yeah, totally.
It's like, yeah, I'm gonna renew my contract. I'm not in risk of losing any job. I mean, I'm not talking about myself. I'm just someone saying this, and this person has done so much more personal work and learned so many new things that it's like, whatever project you'll do in the future, I'll be good at jumping on it. And I've learned matte paintings, and I've learned VR sculpting. I've learned all these things which make me a more valuable artist. And now I can earn more, or, you know, again, be less at risk of being fired because of how useful I am to the team.
Yeah, totally. I think another kind of very separate thing to jump onto, if we're done with this point, is that it's a very, very good idea to socialize, right? We've spoken about it a few times on the podcast, but I'll be damned if the best way to get a job isn't to say, hey, I need a job to somebody that you know who likes you.
Yeah.
So future-proofing yourself, if you are somebody who likes to be inside all day, but you want to future-proof your career, actually getting to know other people at other companies, getting to be acquainted with potentially other artists you may want to work with in the future, understanding how other studios work, understanding their hiring processes, all of these other things is very, very, very useful. Because then in the event that, again, unfortunate things like currently happening in the industry happen, you have potentially a lot more inroads with people rather than having to kind of actually build them up over time.
Yeah. If people know you, and hopefully you've talked with them a few times, maybe they've seen your art, they liked your art, then there's some sort of respect that kind of happened, you know? And once people respect you as a person, they'll be much more willing to help you when something happens, rather than you cold messaging them when something happens, because all of a sudden you're messaging them because you need something out of them, compared to you messaging a friend, you know?
Yeah.
And and yeah, and you same. Some people might be coming to you for help at some point if you're a friend with them, and that's also a great, very rewarding thing to do, is to be able to help a friend.
Yeah. Also, like if you've helped someone in a, you know, in the past, maybe they'll try to extra help you this time because you helped them back then.
You know, like there's this. I don't know if you guys have seen The Office, but there's an episode in The Office where Dwight tries to give favors to everyone because he really wants everyone to owe him a favor. And so like...
Yeah, exactly. That's why you do it. You don't help your friends because you just want the favor back.
And so at some point, James is like, playing with him is like, keeps giving him the favor back. And Dwight gets angry because like, I'll give you the tea. And then it just goes into crazy scales.
So be Machiavellian is what you're saying.
Is that the name of the guy?
With what guy?
Dwight.
No.
Ah.
It's the name of an Italian Renaissance scholar.
Wait, what did you say?
Machiavellian.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like in French you say Machiavellic. Anyway, yes.
That's pretty much what I said. The name of
man. It was missing the French accent, Dan.
Sorry.
My brain doesn't cope.
Would you have got it if I said it in an Italian accent since he was Italian?
Yeah, no.
Anyway.
No, sorry. But yeah, going to events, as you know, we have an event. What a shameless plug we just did here. But, going to places, going to see lectures, speaking to people on Instagram, you know, also just sharing people's story or sharing people's work and just being like, hey, mate, I like your work. It's nice. Yeah. And that's like a very easy way to just start having someone answer you, hey, I like your work too. And then you just chat about.
Or worse, they just say, okay.
Yeah. Stop messaging me now. It's been the 50th time this week.
Hey, I like your work.
But you know, it's
yeah, I like your work.
At the end of the day, it just takes a bit of courage to message someone. And worst case that can happen, they won't answer you.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's it. It's fine.
But best case, you're potentially in their mind for future things where they might need somebody. And if they see in the future that you potentially lose your job, be more willing to help you find stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think another good thing, just kind of related to that social media note, is probably to grow your social media somewhat. Mm-hmm. I know that as a, you know, I totally understand this, by the way, as concept artists, I think we all want to just be like known for the work, you know, kind of thing. We're like, well, if my artwork is good enough, then people will come, you know. If you build it, what's that thing? Build a Colosseum and the people, isn't there some phrase about that? Building something and people will come to see it? I don't know. But anyway,
maybe
the point being, oftentimes that unfortunately isn't the case. There's some really, really good artists I follow on Instagram who only have a few followers, essentially, regardless of how good they are. So putting in a little bit of graft into just like playing the kind of online game of like, hey, you know, do a certain amount, do a little bit more interaction than you usually would, comment on things a little bit more, try to publish your posts at specific times with the right hashtags. This can all be very, very good because, again, you're putting your work in front of the eyes of more people, which, again, increases your chances of when you say, oh, unfortunately, this thing has happened to me, can anybody help? More people being there to help you. A very, very easy way to do that as well, which I think is quite underlooked, is just using LinkedIn.
Yep.
Because LinkedIn has a very, very low barrier for kind of connection almost. There are some artists who I know probably think my work is absolute shit, who we still are connected on LinkedIn, who are like, you know, super influential. And to be able to have any of my stuff go in front of them is very, very beneficial. So again, that's a very easy way, rather than, you know, I think often people focus on using Instagram, but LinkedIn is a very specifically easy way to build up those social connections online.
And like social media is like, if you manage to grow it just a little bit, it's like, you know, it's like speaking to a wider audience,
yeah,
no matter what happens. So if whatever you need, especially when you're looking for a job or if you're looking for specific freelance jobs or whatever, if you're speaking to much more people, then you have more chances for it to be shared and to be seen by even more people.
Totally.
And if you have like really big social media, then companies will potentially hire you just because you have traction as well.
Yeah.
Which probably we are not included in this category or something, but
doing our best.
If you do have like 20,000 followers, it does make a difference sometimes. Because the company might just, yeah,
but also because if you have a certain amount of followers and a certain amount of kind of prestige within the industry, you might also get invited to do talks and stuff like that, which they, again, puts you in front of very important people oftentimes, or, you know, younger juniors at a studio who then, if they see that you're out of work, they might go up to their boss and be like, I just heard that this guy doesn't have work, can we bring him into the team, he's sick. That's again a very easy way
He's the best artist ever.
No, with me, it's
like, he has the flu.
He always vomit on stage. It's terrible.
I just want to say, like, recently I had a situation where I needed help with something, learning something specific for concept art, for work, some skills I just need to learn. Huntsman skills. No, I'm joking. But just like some stuff that I was lacking at my actual work. And this is the first time I felt like it's good to have connections, because I just messaged someone who was a friend of Dan, actually, and I kind of knew him as well. And he agreed to give me a mentorship on like a very short notice to teach me these skills. And it was very, 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 very beneficial. I was incredibly surprised that I actually, that this happened, you know, but yeah, if you know people, clearly it's a good thing, because it can help you to get out of situations that, you know, you might not be able to get out of by yourself.
Most people are definitely open to help.
Yeah.
And again, if they respect you, then there's no reason why they shouldn't help most of the time.
Yeah. I think, probably the last thing to say on this, unless you guys have other points, is just diversify, which is so much easier said than done. But it is, at the end of the day, kind of like the ultimate goal for safety netting yourself. In a way, kind of the podcast and the event is a form of diversification, which we all use to put our names out there a little bit more. Obviously, we also do it for the love of the game. But this also does provide a sort of safety net for us in to some extent, right? We have the event which we organize, which is great. It gives us contacts with a lot of really wonderful people. We have the podcast, which means that lots of people hear from us and our terrible opinions more than they otherwise would. But also all of us have other kind of ventures which we do, which I think provide a lot more stability in different ways. And so I think There's a really good example of this in the Nathan Fowkes Lightbox talk that he did a few years ago, which I think is called A Bulletproof Career, which I highly recommend.
That's an amazing talk.
Yeah, really one of the best talks I've ever heard, I think. And I'm very in love with Nathan Fowkes. He's just such a cool guy. And he has an eye patch. But he talks about the event that led up to him getting an eye patch, which I think was he had like a brain cancer or something, right?
He had a brain tumor.
Yeah.
If I remember well.
And so a lot of the talk is him discussing all the different methods of kind of like diversifying his career he had done at that point and created, and how he started cashing them in the event that he passed away during his very serious surgery, which had like a very high mortality rate. Obviously, amazingly, he survived, and that's wonderful. But it's a very interesting talk to listen to from a business perspective as well, because it shows you, especially if you're a younger artist listening to this, the different things that you can get into to potentially help diversify and strengthen your career, whether it's tutorials, writing, podcasting, stuff like this, teaching, mentoring, trying different forms of freelance, different forms of work. There are many, many, many things that you can do to help increase your financial stability.
And obviously these things don't happen. It's not like, oh, I'm going to teach and then you just teach successfully, right? This guy has been doing it for so long, is such a fruitful career that over the years he developed a lot of ways. So things like this take time and they might lead nowhere, you know? Like a few years ago I was doing photo packs.
Yeah.
I kind of stopped it. It was quite useful for some time. Like, it still works a bit. Yeah. I could continue to venture more into photo packs, which I've chosen not to do the event instead. But things like this, trying to, you know, just try stuff. It might fail, it might work, but if it works, it's great.
Me and my very good friend Reese Griffiths, we set up a thing called the Keyframe Challenge, which was a kind of a pre-existed Concept 101. Mm-hmm. And that was a really fun kind of experiment in terms of like creating resources for the community. And again, it did very well for a certain amount of time and then it kind of died off. But it was a very good experiment in terms of like, you know, a way to, it was an attempt at diversifying, right? Mm-hmm. Which unfortunately didn't go very far. But again, if it had gone far, there were lots of ways where we were discussing, even when we started doing it, how it could potentially help us moving forward.
Doing this has also, it didn't go anywhere, but it taught you a lot about social media, which down the line helped us as well doing the events and also probably your own social media.
So I want to say about diversifying, but not necessarily related to art, which I think is...
Drug dealing,
exactly. For example, I actually don't go to the gym right now. I'm focusing on climbing, but... worst comes to worst, can't get any job, whatever. Like, I know I could potentially do something with personal training because I have acquired knowledge over like the past 8 years. Yes, I wouldn't be training like the best professionals ever, but anyone who is a beginner, I have like a good knowledge how to, you know, take someone from beginner to be like an intermediate lifter, someone who goes to the gym, does things correctly and stuff like that. And I also, all I would need is like maybe take like quick certificate course or something like that to potentially start a job like that, you know. And I also have people coming for advice for this kind of stuff to me, just messaging me or either at work or just people on Instagram or whatever, which is super weird, but it happens.
It's interesting because now that you said that, of course, another important thing I think to talk about, which is relevant to my career, is just like I didn't do a concept art degree, which gave me a far more diversified set of skills, which can be very, very, very helpful. For example, I understand, I mean, I'm pretty shit at it, but I do know how to operate a camera. I do know how to shoot things. I know how to do storyboards for productions. I know how to do graphic design, logo design.
Yep.
I can illustrate a book. There are many, many things that I did at university. And also because I had that broader university degree, I know people in other fields who potentially could get me work in the worst case scenario in those other fields if I really had to. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to consider, is just like when you're forming, you know, whatever kind of educational stuff you're putting together, how deep you want to go into one specific thing. Because I always really thought I wanted to go into concept art, even when I was quite fairly young, like maybe 16. But I still chose to do degrees that had diversified kind of like facets to them, because I knew that there's always that chance, right, that like either an industry evaporates overnight, which, you know, definitely is not going to happen to concept art, but also that I might change my mind and want to do something else at some point in my life. So having that more diversified skill set is super valuable.
It's about just knowing yourself, knowing your skills, and I think being very self-aware of what you're capable and what you're not capable. And maybe if you find that you're relying too much on a specific thing, then it doesn't mean you need to be like a fucking incredible person who knows how to do everything and you're like everywhere and you're the best. But it's more just being aware of like, hey, if the only thing I'm good at and I can count on is this, maybe ask yourself, what else could you work on in your spare time to just, you know, again, have more options when time comes. There's something, I'm going to go in a very heavy business side here, but you should definitely have a look at the Disney. So Disney did some sort of graph, which showed like how are the movies going to influence the merch sales? How are those elements going to influence the theme parks? And all these elements were combined, almost like a mind map in a way, that his business was bulletproof and he would just keep making money forever and grow a huge empire, right?
Yeah.
And he did that when he was alive a long time ago, before Disney actually became that business empire.
So,
and he followed it. So, of course,
create a mind map and then become very lucky and then it works.
Yeah, Walt Disney did, I think, nearly go bankrupt multiple times as well, right?
I know, so. But it's like, I mean, but ultimately the company succeeded
insanely
well, right? And so, of course, we're just people, we cannot go that far, but
understand maybe, basic business strategy.
Yeah, I guess, and try to see how you can apply it to yourself.
Yeah, I think as well, just so, because we should probably jump onto the next
one,
but I do just want to say, obviously, there are probably some people listening to this who have had the unfortunate, you know, circumstances of losing their jobs due to layoffs in the industry. I think we just want you to know that, like, you know, we are very, very, very sympathetic to what has happened. And we totally understand as well that some people might be out there listening to this and being essentially just being like, well, it doesn't really help me now, does it? Mm. And unfortunately, that is the case, right? I think this is it's a very difficult time for everybody in the industry. And you know, we're all very lucky to, as of yet, be completely unaffected by it. But we have a massive amount of sympathy for those that have. And it's just a tough time, man.
Mm-hmm. If you can have a positive mindset, I know it's like difficult to say from my position where I'm like, oh, I have a job, blah, blah. But I've been in situations before that having a positive mindset kept me going. Like, and I know some people that are not in the industry and trying to get into the industry. And when they say me like, oh yeah, I'm just not hanging out with people who have negative mindset, I'm just like, I'm surrounding myself with people who have positive mindset and I just believe I can make it. That's the mindset that you need. I know those people will make it.
I'm into angry mindset.
That's a good
one. You know, I just want to be aggressive and just like, you know, tear the competition apart.
I am Swiss and therefore very neutral. I will not express myself on this matter.
All right. Anyway, let's move on to the next thing.
Cool. So the next subject is, for students who are, it's quite linked to it, but for students who are looking for a job, it's quite easy to look and appear a lot like a student, which is a bit obvious.
Okay.
But quite often you find that some people kind of manage to go away from the student feel, you know? It's like, and so I want to talk about that. It's like, how?
Jules, what does a student feel like?
They have a background.
I'm Swiss. I will not express myself on this matter. No, but it's like, you know, for example, when I was a student.
If you have a backpack with a with a Formula One car on it, don't bring it to the.
If you walk around with a lunchbox with Star Wars clones on it, and
I still do that.
Yeah, when we go to the office together, we hold hands, and the crossing guard lets us across the street with our little lunchboxes. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
That's perfect.
But you know, like, so when I was a student, I used to have a portfolio that looked a lot like a student portfolio. And what does a student portfolio look like? It looks like some specific way where you write like university project under your painting, or like you present it in a very brief made at a school presentation. You know what I mean? Like, how does it call this? The mise en page,
the mise en page?
Yeah.
The
layout.
Je ne comprends pas.
The layout of your presentation is very studenty, right? In a similar matter, sometimes you go to people and you talk to them in a bit of a shy way and you're like, oh, you're such, like, a bit starstruck.
Starstruck,
yeah. Wow, French is really killing me today. But it's like all this kind of stuff that you can try to work on when you go to meet people or when you present your work to really avoid being seen too much like an amateur.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The layout thing is a good thing to start on. I mean, obviously, you want to present your work well. But some really good advice I got from a mentor of mine was that if you're trying too hard to present it, it looks like you're trying to hide something, which is very, very true.
Yeah.
And so a lot of students at university, I'm sure it's also to do with the grading systems at universities, but they try very, very hard with the presentation. You know, they've got their keyframes and the keyframes on like a backdrop, and then it's got like a unique logo pasted over the top in the bottom right hand corner, and then they got their signature in the top left, and they got like a date, and then they got a mini interview description, and then they're doing the design call outs, and it's like this page with like loads of tiny gray boxes with like red gradients going through them. It's just a bit much, you know. I think if you look at the majority of professional artists, students, I'm addressing you right now, you will find that generally they're very, very pared back design for the layout of the pages, because they want the images themselves to breathe very heavily. A great example of this is if you look in, for example, art books and try to kind of not look at the page layout, but just at the images on the page. I think a lot of art students might get it from looking at art books, because art books obviously are highly designed, because they are like essentially pieces of, you know, in like separate media. But if you look at the work that's often on those pages, they are usually just like a guy wearing a helmet with like 01 written in the bottom right hand corner.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so that's really what you need to extrapolate from here, is just like, yeah, it's the simplified layout, the simplified look of things that is going to help you. So yeah, just look around like other professional portfolios and see how they show their work and use that as your reference point. Because again, you don't want to look like you're hiding things behind it, like extraneous details, essentially.
And it doesn't mean you don't have to care about presentation, but it's about, you know, caring the right amounts and also understanding what's made outside of the university context and how to present stuff. Another thing that you can do to look a bit more aware of the situation is just make your, if you go speak with people from a certain company or if you apply to certain jobs, is just making a research because you before you reach to a company or before you talk to someone, just so you know you're not going to go to a company who does like car games and you're going to show them your medieval knights, you know. And it's like some of the stuff, by being in the industry, you kind of understand it, you're around there long enough to just know it, right? But it's like knowing who you should share your work with and when that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the funny thing is, like, once you're in the industry for a while, a lot of conversations you have with other professionals kind of go like this. It will just be like, hey, do you know what Johnny's doing? And you'll go, oh yeah, he's working on that thing with Steve. And they go, yeah, that's right, he's working on Bibbly Blop with Steve and Martin. And you go, nice, I love Steve and Martin and Johnny. And like, from an outside perspective, that is a totally meaningless conversation, but between professionals, it does make sense. And I think what's kind of worth extrapolating from that is that there are certain, there's almost like a language to professional talk that if you understand it, can come across very well. If you understand who Johnny is when some artist says to you, I'm working with Johnny, and you can think that's probably Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat, famous concept artist, then that's going to be a meaningful interaction you can have, right? Rather than you going, who's that? And then they kind of go, I don't know if I should say.
And then there's NDA stuff.
I don't know if it's related to like appearing, because like you can, you know, we're talking about the topic of appearing professional. Like, you could be appearing more professional when you go to interviews, or you can appear more professional and just talking with other professionals. You know, it's, but when you're talking with other professionals, it's like with all of this stuff, it's just like knowing how to handle yourself and like the basic principles of how to speak with people, how to be polite, like how to allow them to tell you what they want to tell. Like, if you are showing a portfolio, you need to be able to let them critique it. You cannot be like, and this, oh, and then this, and then I change this here for this, and then this, and this. It's like professionals, like any good professional, even if I ask for feedback for my colleagues or for Jules or Dan on personal work, like I give them my project, they say a few words, and then I wait what they say. And even if I have like 50 things I want to say during the stuff that they're saying, I just shut up and I just wait until they finish with what they have to say. Or even I just try to extrapolate more of their information, because it doesn't matter what I am trying to say. It just matters what they are trying to say, you know, and what they are trying to teach you. And like, I think that's one of the very important professional things to do, is like wait until other people finish before you even start to say something.
Yeah, totally. It's about like understanding in which context you are, which is you're asking someone for feedback, and therefore you should respect them and hear out what they have to say, right? And again, as what you described, I've been in a situation as well a few times where I was like, but what the feedback they just gave to me is very unfair because I've done all these things, but they haven't seen it yet. And so I really want to justify myself. But no, you know, you've asked them for feedback. So it's like, listen to it, take the bullet, and then be like, then if you really want to justify yourself at the end and you really feel like it needs to be said, go for it. But usually yeah. It's like, okay, thank you for the feedback. I appreciate it. Or maybe just, even if you don't understand it or don't agree, maybe just ask more questions. Why?
As a teacher, when you get a student who just goes, yeah, but, it's like very frustrating because it really does mean that they're not, as someone who does a lot of teaching, when somebody comes to you and they start trying to say, like, if you say your line art's bad and they go, yeah, well, it's bad because of this and this and this, it feels like they're not really engaging with the criticism you've presented them with. It's like they're trying to jump out of the criticism. Which generally speaking, if you're a professional artist, you're just not going to do that. You're just going to take it on the chin, you know, and just be like, okay, I'll fix that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because that is your job. Anybody who does that, I do find it like wildly kind of like unprofessional. And it is very frustrating as well, especially from that kind of, as you were discussing, like that critique kind of like position too. Yeah,
totally. And, you know, again, the idea here is not to look like a student or not to appear too much like someone who's, there's nothing wrong, by the way, with looking like a student, right? Everyone is a student at some point in their life. But some people might consider you more for a job if they feel like you would already fit the job context, right?
Totally.
And what you just said fits the job context. When a client tells me, that should be blue, and I'm like, well, no, because this really, it doesn't fit with the world building. And they're like, no, it should be blue. And I'm just going to be, okay.
Listen, Mr. Director, you don't understand your own film, buddy.
Yeah. Or even sometime, you know, like if it's very wrong when they told you, like, oh, okay, it's blue. Okay, I didn't understand. But and then you can just elaborate a bit, but in a very neutral way, and then see what they say. But really, at the end of the day, you're just, that's your professional work. So if someone tells you something, just take it and apply it.
Even if just down to like the one of the most common ones I hear is if I say, XYZ thing isn't good, they go, well, I just didn't have enough time.
Mm.
Oh my God, can you imagine saying that to a client?
Mm.
You just get like absolutely laughed out of the room. It's a really unfortunate thing, but not having enough time just comes down to you, like essentially you not having the skills to do it fast enough. There are times where it's reasonable, right, to say that. But again, regardless of that, of how reasonable it is, in a professional setting, if a client says to you, this isn't good enough, you can't go back and be like, well, it's because you didn't give me enough time, mate. It's like, no, you just take your fucking beating and you just move on. Yeah, yeah. Well, if you paid me another 10K, maybe I would do it on time. It's like, no, like you just go, all right, sorry about that. I'll give it another go. Yeah. And you see what you can do. And if it becomes a consistent issue, maybe then you can very politely explain to somebody, well, it's because of these reasons. Would you consider doing something about it?
Yeah.
But again, as a student, you just got to take your lumps, essentially.
Exactly. So specifically as a student, right?
I want to say, like, another thing that I find is important to do as a professional is to, or just even as a student that wants to be a professional, is present your work with confidence. If you show your work, you cannot be like, oh, I'm not sure, like, oh, I'm...
Or
oh,
apologize it's, the whole time.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, this is really... it's working. Oh, maybe. Oh, yeah, so this is kind of what I wanted, but I'm not very good. I couldn't... It's like, no, just show your work. Don't say anything. Just be like, this is where I'm at. This is what I did. I think this works this way, maybe not this way.
Well, especially because...
If you are presenting professional artwork, you know, you just have to be like, this is what I did. That's it. Like, you shouldn't be talking about how you feel about your own work. I mean, if it sucks, then you fix it later. I mean...
But also, if you think it sucks, that doesn't mean that whoever you're presenting it to thinks it sucks as well, which is another big issue. If you come in swinging through the gate being like, it's shit. And then, you know, you might have a client or an art director or whoever who looks at the work and go, actually, this is perfect for the project that we're working on. So you're just shooting yourself in the foot. I think once again, like just going back to the criticism thing, once somebody starts being criticism, like giving you criticism, it's very worthwhile being humble about it and acknowledging and being like, yeah, I did think potentially there were some issues here and here, maybe. But, you know, again, don't shoot yourself in the foot, like Stefan's saying, you know, just go in confident.
If you feel like you talk with someone for a job, for example, and the overall mood of the current session ends up being, please give me a job, I need it, that's the wrong mood. No, but I mean, that happened to me when I was a student. I was like, I'm very young and very motivated and I'm sure I could do the job and look at, and but then it's like, I kind of put myself in the, I'm inexperienced and I need the chance, you know?
Yeah.
But if you do it too hard, then you just look younger and you look less experienced. And again, I've done that mistakes many, many times, so I know what I'm talking about. And sometimes it's just about being like, hey, here's my work. I'm trying to improve. I think I could be good for that job. So what do you think? You know? Yeah. And you don't need to say more.
That's true. Actually, just not saying too much can be very helpful.
Yeah, probably. If just you saying less words.
Yeah.
Because just grunt and throw your portfolio.
There it is.
Slap the
phone. What do you think? Like that. Yeah. I mean, but I do want to, this might sound like a joke at first, but I'm serious. How do you think a student should visually actually like make themselves look less of a student? I do see plenty of students who come to events and stuff who dress pretty sloppily. I mean, I'm not talking about like, I'm not saying people have to come in a bloody suit and tie. In fact, I would say definitely don't come in a suit and tie because I have also seen people do that. Understand the vibe of the industry. Concept art and entertainment design.
Go in cosplay.
Yeah, go in cosplay. Go in cosplay is your favorite character. Yeah. But I mean, I think you need to understand it's a jeans and t-shirt industry, right? It's the kind of thing where people dress pretty casually. It's like smart casual look, but you still can't be too sloppy about it. Like, don't come in like a hoodie that has stains on it, for God's sake. Don't come in like your shittiest pair of trainers. Like, at the very least, give them a wash and a clean before you come out in them. Try to look your best, you know? It's not the case of like, you know, it's not a beauty contest, but you still need to look presentable, because again, you might be trotted out in front of clients, you might be pulled out in front of other people, and you don't want to just look like you crawled out of your bed, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a professional context. Just see it as a professional thing.
Yeah. Once you're professional, you can be like me and look like you crawled out of your bed.
Yeah, I just laughed there because I was like, we definitely look like shit every day, Dan.
We're the least well-dressed people at Framestore, for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, no, we work from home, so it doesn't. It's fine.
You guys dress pretty well.
I have a suit on the top, and I'm naked underneath the cap. All
right, Jules.
That's a joke.
The suit and the tie.
No, what did I say?
You mean the suit and the tie is a joke?
Yeah.
The top part is a joke.
Exactly.
Yeah, only the top part. Only the part. He doesn't wear anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You get used to it after a few months of Zoom calls.
Yeah, you know, after everyone bleached their eyes, it was fine.
As long as he doesn't stand up to get something, it's fine.
And I keep trying to stand up. Do you want to see the book on the shelf? No, we don't want to see it. You sure? I can go get it if you want.
No, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Do not move. Okay, if you insist, I'll go get it.
Oh man. But yeah, I mean, just try and look nice, you know, have a shower beforehand, put on some deodorant.
Smell. Try not to smell.
Yeah. Put a breath mint in. I don't know. Just do the usual stuff that you would do. You know, treat it like you're going on a date, pretty much. Yeah.
And this is not just for students, that's for everyone.
Oh, totally. Unless you're like, I reckon Jamma could probably dress pretty fucking bad and people would still...
But I think he likes to dress.
Dude, maybe that's what he should do. Maybe because, you know, he has a lot of people coming up to him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he should just start dressing really awful and not showering. And that would probably...
I don't think that would change anything.
You don't think so?
People would still go to him. I mean, he's an amazing artist.
He is, yeah.
The last point is also, if you do your research, then you might... Because I feel like something I also did as a mistake when I was a student, I just applied to every single job in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And many of them, if I did more research, which I did, but at some point you just go for it, you know? Then I probably should not have applied for Need for Speed, for example, you know? Because I had zero cars in the portfolio. And also, I guess Need for Speed jobs.
Oh, right.
I didn't apply for Need for Speed, but like car games, you know? If I don't have cars in the portfolio. But it's like knowing what the studio you apply for do, and also knowing the frequency you have to apply. You have to apply, right? If you apply to the same jobs every week or every 2 weeks, you're gonna become a meme in the company because like, oh, that guy sent us portfolio again.
I'm sure.
Oh,
what? This happens a lot.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, and it's like, oh, what changed in the portfolio of that guy? Nothing changed. And in how long? Nothing changed in 6 months. So it's like knowing where you apply, knowing that your work kind of fits where you apply. And also knowing when to apply, which means that maybe apply only every 6 months or apply when you feel like your portfolio has changed enough for the recruiter to be like, oh, okay, there's a change. This guy who used to be not hireable is now hireable.
There's a very simple rule for this, which I think is reapply when 50% of your portfolio has changed and been deleted. If you have six projects, right, not images, in your portfolio on ArtStation, and you apply to something, reapply when you've deleted three and replaced them with three new ones, essentially.
I partially disagree about the don't apply for like a Need for Speed or something that's not in your portfolio, because like you never know what a company is working on.
True.
Like a game company who does only sci-fi games could be doing a fantasy game all of a sudden. And like you'd never know that, right? Like who knows? Like maybe Sony Santa Monica is doing some random pony game, right?
You can't leak that.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know. Oh, My Little Pony is in Sony Santa Monica.
I think it's more to do with researching the styles of projects. I made a similar thing. I was like, I remember applying for a lot of internships when I was at university, trying to get like any industry experience. Even the one that I then did nearly get, it got cancelled because they had an exclusive agreement with, I think it was your university or something, Stefan. They had like an exclusive agreement where they could only take interns from that school. So then I got rejected from it, which was really disappointing. But I was applying for like everything and anything. And yeah, I was applying for mobile games companies, gambling companies, film studios, on-set production jobs, like literally anything they could take me. And the problem was my portfolio at the time had a very non-committal kind of like style issue where I had some very stylized stuff, some attempts at more realistic stuff, some attempts at like riot splash art stuff. And so really, I wasn't appealing to anybody, unfortunately. So I think that's probably where the research is more important, more so than what games
they're
working
on. You're right. Like if Sony Santa Monica is gonna do a My Little Pony game,
it's still gonna be realistic.
It's gonna be a realistic My Little Pony. It's not gonna be a stylized, funky.
I hope we don't get in trouble for leaking that.
Oh yeah,
it could be really bad.
Dude, what if they actually do My Little Pony? I would play that, man. My Little Pony from Sony Santa Monica
with Kratos riding the ponies. Yeah,
yeah, of course. All right,
cool. Next topic. Last project.
So last topic is related to breaking down a brief into its main components. So this is going to be a bit more related to actual work rather than just like advice on life, kind of. I don't know. But it's related to how, if you get a brief, let's say someone asks you to design a glass of water, right? You get a brief, design a glass of water, and then it will have other components. Like you're working on a medieval game, 16th century, let's say, and it's a glass of water for someone who has a lot of money, right? So like maybe a king or someone who owns a big estate or something like that, right? So you start with breaking down the brief into what is the basic of the basics of this thing. Well, you're designing a cup. Okay, so what is like the main silhouette of a cup? Well, it's a cylindrical object, let's say, right? That has a hole in the middle where water can pour in, and probably has a handle as well, but not all of them. If it's a cup, it could also not have a handle. So, but it might need a space so you can hold it.
Do cups have holes in the middle? I don't think so. I think they're insetted from the top.
Is that what you call it? Inset? I don't know what you call
it. There is no hole in the middle of a cup.
Is there a hole in the straw?
Sorry, I apologize.
Is there a hole in the straw?
A what?
In a straw?
Yeah, does a straw has a hole?
Well, no, but a cup has an end to it, unlike a straw.
No, but I mean,
you can even say, yeah.
This is probably my...
No, you can't. It's not the same thing.
This is my shitty English translation, but I mean like whatever the inset is where the water pours in.
Sure, yeah.
In a cup, right? So it's a cylinder and has a insert where the water pours in, and potentially it might have a handle, might not, right? But if we're just talking about a silhouette, if you add a handle, it will be like an instant read that it's a cup, right? So you think of these elements as basic elements, and that's where you start, okay? And then from that basic silhouette of a cup...
Well, so essentially, sorry, just to interrupt, but what you're saying is the most important thing when you're starting a brief is to ship of Theseus whatever you're doing.
Exactly.
Which is a philosophical kind of idea, which came around, I don't know when it came around, but it's this idea that there is this old Greek ship that Theseus rode around during his adventures in the kind of Greek mythos.
Yeah.
And it gets found, right? And it gets put in a museum, and over the years, they replace maybe a few planks here and there. They pull apart some of it. And as the years go by, more and more of the original ship gets replaced, right?
Yeah.
And so the question is, if none of the original ship remains, when does it stop being the ship of Theseus, and when does it start being something new? And in the same way, the question with the briefs is, if you're tasked with designing a glass, how much design can you do to change the basic concept of a glass before it stops being a glass, essentially?
Yeah. So you need to identify those things. And then once you have the basic idea of the glass, you start adding in the other things in the brief as modifiers. So like, it has to be a fancy glass. Okay, maybe you add some filigree onto it. If it's 16th century, even better, you start to look into the filigree and decorations that they did during that era, you know, on the knights' swords and shields and armory and stuff like that. Or maybe you make it like some sort of specific interesting shape, because interesting shapes like are unusual shapes that are not just straight cylinders are more difficult to manufacture. So it means there's more time put into it. And then, you know, you just add these other modifiers. Okay, maybe it's a cup for like a very angry, I don't know, guy. So he has to have like lots of triangles or something like that on it. So,
what it's a cup where people drink then for sacrifice, maybe, you know?
Yeah. But, and then, you know, as you design it, you're also adding these like functional elements that you're thinking about as well. Like, if it's a cup, it needs to have a place. So it needs to like sit, it has to have a stability, right? It cannot just like topple over easily, right? Mm. So you'll try to design something that has some stability, and then maybe you can even put it into your callout sheets and stuff like that. But the point being is like learning how to break down a brief will save you a lot of time. Same like to what Dan was saying about the ship of Theseus, to never go too far away from the brief. You will never end up like starting design a cup and you design a pen by accident, right?
Mm.
It's not the best example, but that can happen. And it can happen, for example, better would be like with an environment. If you're designing a canyon, for example, right? And you add your design a canyon and the brief calls for a canyon, but you end up adding a lot of trees and then you can barely see that it's in a canyon. Well, at this point, you just designed a forest. You didn't design a canyon, you know? Yeah. And if it's a forest that's in a canyon, you need to show that it's a forest in a canyon. If you're not showing it through the image, you are just designing a forest. I'm sorry, right? So but if you know, like, what is a canyon? What are the basic shapes of a canyon? You know, you look at the photography, you go, oh, it's these big hills that like going dipping down. Okay, that means every concept that I do needs to have some clarification, some of these forms that we identify as a canyon. And then everything else on top of that is just like the shape language that you are adding to express the rest of the parts of the brief.
Yeah. I think what you're describing here as well could be a great way to structure your references.
Yeah. Right?
Because some references, the way I use references, like some of them are only for specific parts of the object or the environment.
Yeah.
And you could definitely have like, you know, it's a cup. So I'm going to have a reference for like the kind of shape your cup should have, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, but the cup has like a auto stirring thing because it's like a for science stuff, you know, it stirs itself.
Yeah.
Then you look at reference for that. And while you think of all the stuff you just described, then you can also build your references. And if you have references with the type of thinking you just described, yeah, that might help you also to not go too far away from what you also again just described. And it's because if you have an image of a canyon, then you're like, okay, that's what it should really look like. You know, yeah, like that's the amount of trees, canyons, the canyons I want to have, usually have, you know,
yeah,
because you have the pictures. So that could be a good way to tie it into the reality and maybe make sure you don't go off track too much.
Yeah. And if you, you know, if you build your brief these ways, you always kind of hit the mark and it will be a lot faster. I mean, to me, this is something I've learned recently. I've been applying it for work and, you know, this way I make sure that all my work is kind of consistent and I know what I'm doing. When I start the image, I'm not like asking questions, you know. It's not helpful when you're doing a lake in a canyon, all of a sudden you start doing a hill by accident, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you're not sure, am I doing a lake in a canyon or a hill? Yeah. You know, it's just like you need to decide early.
And so is that a process that you use every time you design something?
It's a process I use every time right now, yeah, for work, for anything. Yeah, I've been doing a mentorship. I did some loot boxes, supply crates.
Crates, yeah.
And then I did some trees. Mm-hmm. And I did like, for example, I had to design some small trees, right? So I'd be like, what is the silhouette of a small tree? Well, most of the time, silhouette of a small tree is something that has bigger crown than it's long. So it's like wider than it's long.
Mm.
And that for me is like the basic silhouette of like, if I had to show you a small tree, you would always guess small tree by this component, right? Mm. Like, yes, you can have a small tree that also is like a little bit longer. It just has a tiny crown.
Mm-hmm.
But 90% of the time, this is the silhouette. And then, of course, the other part of it, like, yeah, it's small. So like maybe if you put a character next to it, like you'll guess the scale better, right?
Yeah.
But then once I figure those things out, I add the components that I want. Like I want it to be like magical forest, let's say, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing that I'll be thinking about is, if it's a magical, I'll be thinking about shape language. Like, how can I express the fact that it's magical through my shapes?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just, especially if it's like a tree, and I'll be thinking, okay, maybe I make it a bit more curvy, or maybe I'll experiment with like the way the branches look, because the branches can like curve into interesting patterns. That way it's like more magical.
Yeah.
Or maybe I want it to be like night, like what is it called? Calm but dangerous, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I go like, I design some pretty shapes that are very
spiky, aggressive.
No, I design like circular shapes, but when you get closer to it, they have spikes, right?
Ah.
It's like it's the okay. thing of like being from distance, it looks pretty, but
okay.
if close, it looks dangerous, you know, calm but dangerous. Like, and that's the first things I'll be thinking about is like, what kind of shape language I can add on top of the basic silhouette.
Yeah.
And then I collect references for all those things, then I just sketch it out and blah, blah.
I assume this is also very useful for word building, right? Like if you,
yeah,
or like if you do a big project and you design a lot of stuff, almost like a world building project or for a video game, you probably will have to play with some of the set of rules that you're describing. And by being constant with those sets of rules, then you can just almost waterproof yourself in terms of just always respecting the brief, because you know the pieces of the puzzle that you always need to go with, and then you can carry on with them.
Yeah, it's, I guess that's part of the like understanding a brief when you're doing like a world building project. You need to set what the world is about before you start it, at least like the main pillars or the rules. Otherwise, you'll just be lost. And it's very difficult at the beginning to make a choice. But we talked about before on this podcast, like at some episodes where like how to come up with new briefs. So if you do sort out through it, you'll find it somewhere.
That is though a great exercise, I think, someone who wants to create a new project but tends to go a bit messy with the process. That's a good thing to do at the start, is really break it down, but to an extreme way, like you just explained, like to the most basic stuff, like it's a cup.
Well, I think this kind of thing, if you want to practice it in its most kind of useful form, can be around kind of like taking a historical project and then creating a variance on that historical project. So maybe you can take, for example, a Roman military platoon or whatever the fuck they were called. Sorry, I sound very laissez-faire about Roman military formations, but I'm sure they're very...
Did you think about the Roman Empire today?
But you could take, for example, something like that, and then you could design a new formation that had not pre-existed. So maybe if, I don't know... a skin flaying platoon who they just love cutting off everyone's skin. I don't know. I was thinking about Necrons. Anyway, so you do that. And then how do you take that new idea, which is, of course, very antithetical to a lot of the real stuff to do with the Roman military, and still make it look like the Roman military?
That's a good point, yeah.
And that will help you. By doing an exercise like that, you will have to kind of outline and break down what exactly it is that makes this thing look like this thing. Same thing if you want to create a piece of architecture, for example, in a very specific style. If you want to do it in Art Deco versus Brutalist, there's a very different set of rules that you need to understand for both different approaches to the design.
But I think for me, the main takeaway, which I'm just going to repeat myself from here, is like you don't start by like designing the craziest platoon and then realizing it doesn't look like a platoon. You start by understanding what makes the platoon.
Yeah.
Platoon, and then you start adding things on top.
Because at the end you're still designing a spin on the
And at the end you will know when you went wrong.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I went wrong here. This was already too much.
Don't have guns. That's why I went
wrong. Oh shit, it looks sci-fi. Oh, I made a sci-fi spaceship instead of a platoon again.
Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. Daniel always starts with
I always start with a spaceship and it just ends up somewhere different. It's really weird. Yeah.
Where's the spaceship gonna crash this time? Into a ship or on the planet?
Ends up being a big pink man all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's only so many things you can do. especially like with personal work. Because with a film project, like everybody has the benefit of going and seeing the film. So you can just have a bunch of totally unrelated images. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But if you do that as personal work, people will look at it and go, what's going on? Because there's no extraneous media to connect it all.
Yeah.
So you have to go, generally you have to go with like very simple narratives for personal work.
Yeah.
I've been trying to do that kind of stuff where it's like, it could be fit in a movie without too much context, but most of the time it just looks bonkers or weird. And it's like, okay, so how do I make it a bit more simple so it's not too crazy? And it's anyway.
Is that the signal to end?
I believe so.
Anyway,
it is time.
Cool.
That was an interesting episode. We talked about a lot of stuff.
We hope this was
helpful. Nothing else to add.
I hope this was helpful for you. And
I like when we tell the audience that it was an interesting episode.
Yeah it was.
I was very clever in this one. I loved the way I spoke. Wow.
Wow. So cool.
If I was you, I would be very inspired by me.
Yeah. I feel inspired right now.
So inspired.
This is the kind of confidence, ladies and gentlemen, that you need to get into the entertainment.
Yeah, as a student, you should go to someone and say, you're about to get your mind blown.
Yeah.
You're about to get so inspired.
By the end of this conversation, you're going to give me your job.
Yeah. I mean, they'll definitely remember you if you say that. But anyway, so that will be the end for today's episode. We really hope you enjoyed listening. And if you want more, please feel free to subscribe and ring the notification bell. We release episodes every 2 weeks. And if you want any more additional information about the podcast or the event, be sure to check out our Instagram linked in the description below. Thanks again, and we'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye.